With us now, as he usually is every Monday at this time, is Bob Henley with a look at the busy week ahead. Bob, could you give us a preview of what we can expect from the Keystone debate? President Obama has already committed to vetoing the bill if it gets to his desk. Is there enough support in Congress to override that veto?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is on Friday, the Nebraska Supreme Court declined to support challenges to a state law that would allow the government to bypass the Public Service Commission that had approved the pipeline. So that was something that President Obama had held up as a reason why he was going to veto. He also is still waiting for his State Department review to be completed. We saw in the House that some 26 Democrats did join with Republicans, so it's not that far off from the two-thirds requirement to override. In the Senate, you have 54 freshly minted Republicans, of course, and there are six Democrats led by Joe Manchin that are from more conservative states like West Virginia. I think I've got a list here. Joe Donnelly from Indiana, Heidi Heitkamp from North Dakota, Claire McCaskill from Missouri, John Tester from Montana, and Mark Warner from Virginia. So that gets you to 60. Do you have seven to get to 67? That's what's going to make this week very interesting. One of the things that former Majority Leader Reid prevented from happening was from a vote coming to the floor. There is a tremendous amount of labor support, Christy and Michael, for this, actually. And one of the things that that Reid's legislative skill prevented was from senators having to make a choice between the agenda of labor, still looking for some good-paying jobs, which they say will come with this pipeline, pipe fitters and the rest, and the environment. And then we will see some creative legislating here. Actually, if he's true to his word, there'll be an opportunity for Senator Bernie Sanders to offer, say, an amendment where the Senate would go on the record about climate change. Is it possible that the pot could be sweetened to include some kind of major rebates for conservation and wind and solar energy? Let's stay tuned. Who knows?
So, you know, you sort of mentioned this, what we know is a kind of classic debate pitching labor against the environment. And we've seen the ways in which the Obama administration, starting when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, has sort of put this off. Are we looking at, are we just kind of staring down the clock here? Or is there a chance that Obama's veto will sort of put the final nail in the coffin for the Keystone Pipeline?
I really am going to be glued to C-SPAN to see how this goes. The other thing that has to be factored in here is the willingness of Saudi Arabia to let the price of oil continue to drop.
Right.
Because that's part of the big picture here. Every dollar that the price drops and every dime and penny it drops at the gas pump, it makes this whole tar sands enterprise more costly.
Right.
And so, you know, there's many moving parts here. And there is, you know, the president, because he keeps holding up these procedural issues, you know, he's not been forthright and said, I oppose this because of global warming.
Right.
He's saying, well, you know, it's like he's like a frat guy whose homework's not done. Well, you know, I'm waiting for this guy, that guy. I mean, you don't hear a principled stand.
Yeah.
So that gives me kind of a feeling that, you know, it could be priced to move, Christy and Michael.
Yeah, wow. All right, so turning from Keystone to local politics, last week, kind of an explosive report that Governor Chris Christie finally had to sit down with federal prosecutors to talk about what he knows about Bridgegate. That same week, Democrats in the state legislature were calling for yet another investigation into Christie, this time for his handling of an $800 million Port Authority contract for the operation of concessions there in the observation deck on top of the World Trade Center, which, of course, we know has this Dallas Cowboys tie. So before we discuss his State of the State address, what is the background on this observation deck deal?
Well, who knew? You'd think that, you know, there would be no role for Jerry, you know, and the Dallas Cowboys on top of the World Trade Center. But evidently, back in March of 2013, when no one was really paying attention, I'm reading from a Port Authority press release here, nationally renowned Legends Hospitality, chosen to develop and operate three-story observation deck atop One World Trade Center. Both Governor Cuomo and Christie, never known to be bashful, pushed this full court. This particular syndicate doing this includes the Yankees, who know something about moving tens of thousands of people through overpriced turnstiles, and the Dallas Cowboys have a little LLC. And so now the question is, did this quid pro quo, even though, you know, the idea of, two weekends ago, Governor Christie and his entire family, that seemed a little much, were flown down by private jet and enjoyed watching the Dallas Cowboys from a private box with Mr. Jones. And the cost of such an event, tens of thousands of dollars, and it may fly in the face of the conflict of interest rules in the state, signed into law by Jim McGreevy and then refined by Governor Christie. Of course, there is one little loophole, which is that evidently, as the way Governor Christie conceives this, if Jerry Jones is his friend, he can take from him whatever he wants. And so now, just like Bill Clinton got hung up on what the meaning of is, now we're going to wonder how Christie defines friend.
And so, obviously, Chris Christie wasn't the good luck charm that he thought he was after after the Dallas Cowboys lost this weekend. But I wonder, just talk briefly about what it means that that Chris Christie was forced to sit down with these federal investigators, right? It seems like that's not the kind of thing that somebody who knew that he had absolutely no culpability and was continuing to insist on his innocence would be forced to do, no?
Well, I mean, it was also a two-hour event, which says that there was some substance to it. He is ultimately the boss of his operation, and was still just, and I asked him about this at the time, I guess, last year when this first really surfaced, you know, when he, Bridget Kelly, of course, was the aide who, you know, whose email was basically published by the Bergen Record, and that's the email within which we saw that with full volition, she's an, you know, a high-ranking operative for Governor Christie within state government, it's more important to add, calling for, you know, traffic trouble at Fort Lee. And the fact that when Christie fired her because she supposedly lied to him and didn't own up to her role in it, the fact that he never, ever asked her what the real story was told me that he had an exposure. His lack of curiosity is just singular.
Right. He wants to not know.
Exactly.
Huh. So what do you think we can expect from Chris Christie's State of the State address coming up?
Well, he's in a world of harm financially. One of the things that happened is that, I mean, New Jersey is just lagging in the nation and the region in terms of job creation. It's almost like a separate country. He's only added 50% of the jobs lost in the recession, and those jobs don't measure up to the ones we lost. Compare that to Governor Andrew Cuomo's track record, adding some 200% to the jobs, again, not paying what those old ones did, but still, that's impressive. Next door in Pennsylvania to the west, 96% of the jobs have been returned. Meanwhile, there is just a depression in Atlantic City. You've got four of the 12 casinos closed, one in bankruptcy, and the fifth expected to file later this month. 8,000 people, Michael and Christie, have lost their jobs who work for the casinos, and that doesn't even take into account the 10,000 to 15,000 vendors who show up regularly at the loading docks of these casinos that are now closed. The property values of Atlantic City have collapsed 45%. Now, Atlantic City, so this has an impact on the state's revenue. We know that Governor Christie reneged on his piece of this great bipartisan pension deal. You may remember that Senate President Sweeney and former Speaker, Assembly Speaker Oliver put together this pension deal where public employees, and this is not widely reported, indeed paid more into their health and welfare and their fringe benefits, and even increase their retirement age. Meanwhile, the piece of the deal that had to happen was that Governor Christie would make $2 billion in pension contributions. The governor, who was, I don't know what he was doing, he doesn't look like the kind that, you know, I don't know if he was, he was just disconnected from reality, assumed an 8% increase in revenue last year, something nobody thought was really going to happen.
Right.
That didn't come to bear. The state fell short in revenue. I don't know. He was busy. You know, he spent the first, I guess, third of his second term out of the state. Maybe that's how it happened. But one of the things that's resulted is that he did not make that pension payment, which has now made the state's long-term liabilities just huge. And there's no sign of any. I mean, we just got bad news that Mercedes is pulling out of Bergen County, where they had 1,000 employees, good-paying jobs for over 50 years. The erosion of the tax base continues. So I think what you'll hear from him is doubling down on what he's always said, is that we have to cut the public sector and we have to cut taxes. And he's probably going to. We also might see one of the things that he's done that is a little bit different than his conservative makeup is the push to reform the state's drug laws. And that is something where he is now actually trying to get the state to look at the issue of drug crimes more as a public health issue as opposed to a criminal justice one. And that is something that I think you'll hear more about in this address.
We're speaking with Bob Henley. Bob Henley regularly joins us Mondays at this time, and you can find Bob's work on Salon, Who, What, Why, and other locations. We'll talk about that just as he leaves us. But before you go, Bob, what are the proposed reforms on the city's Board of Corrections agenda this week? And give us a little background on just the Board of Corrections. I think
Right. This kind of threw me through a loop. I didn't even know such a thing existed. I knew about the commissioner and the role of the mayor, but evidently the charter calls for this freestanding board that reviews procedures, three appointed by the mayor, three appointed by the council, and three appointed by the consultation between the mayor and the judiciary. This is a big deal. This is, they're talking about rolling back the draconian solitary confinement rules that have had such a devastating effect on inmates. They're talking about a more judicious use of it to focus on truly violent offenders, and also making sure that this what we know to be a very debilitative technique is not used on the 18 to 21 year old minor population. This is something a long time coming. Of course, we know the Department of Justice is all over the conduct of what's been happening at Rikers.
Yeah,
we know
absolutely.
That violence has been on the upsurge there. So I would say this is a tangible example of what happens when this is something that Mayor de Blasio, I think, can look at as a sign that there's some change coming to New York City.
Wow. So, some bright spots there, looking at changes in the corrections system. Of course, there have been activists pushing for this stuff. We've seen the corrections commissioner already make some moves, but now this move from the Board of Corrections, we're looking for that to come up this week. Bob, tell us, tell our listeners how they can find you and what you have coming up this week, coming out in publications.
Sure. I have, of course, we'll be doing something at Salon related to the state of the state of New Jersey by the numbers. And that's something that really needs to be focused on because the Christie approach to economics is still something held widely by the Republican Party, and it's been an abject failure by every objective measure in New Jersey. And then also I have a piece on the City Limits website, a three-part series that looks at the state of the current construction industry and the role of independent monitors in trying to ferret out waste, fraud, and abuse. And unfortunately, you wouldn't be surprised to know, there still is waste, fraud, and abuse.
So we're speaking to Bob Henley. He tweets at Stuck Nation. You can find his work there. Find out where his upcoming publications, like he said, Salon, City Limits. He joins us every Monday morning here on The Morning Show. Bob, thanks again for being with us.
I guess I have to go out and feed the goats now. I have to. It's too cold.
Take care of those goats. Thank you, Bob.
All right.